One of the nice things of attending conventions like the UK Games Expo is that you finally run into people you've been tweeting with for a while. Nice to meet you, James.
Hello, nice to meet you too.
Can you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Certainly. I am James Isles. I run UFO Press. It publishes such games as Legacy Life Among the Ruins, What Ho World, the Woes of Halcyon role-playing game, Rhapsody of Blood, the Castlevania-like dungeon exploration game, and more.
Grant was quite, it was very positive about Legacy. Can you tell us a bit about it?
Legacy is a game about what happens after the apocalypse. The world has been through some sort of reality-twisting nightmare event, and your family have managed to survive and claw their way out of the rubble. Somewhat changed, but still alive. And the game is about what sort of world those families create over generations. Each player has their own family that they control. Maybe they're synthetic robots who have self-awareness. Maybe they're vigilantes who are trying to bring justice on those who cause the apocalypse. But either way, as you play, you're moving between the grand strategy of the family level, sending armies out and spies and building structures, down to the drama of the individual characters going out on an exploration into the wasteland or conducting tense negotiations between bands of warlords, all that sort of thing.
So you play at different scales.
Exactly. And there are rules to manage that shift in scale and make sure it's not all overwhelming and that you're constantly getting, as a group, inspiration for what happens next.
Is it actually a quick game or something you play for multiple sessions as a big campaign? Because it feels a bit the two at once. It's interesting. Yeah.
So it's a game to be played over campaigns was how I designed it. It's certainly possible to, in one session, play through an age of the game where, you know, you've had a big inciting incident and something dramatic has happened to upset the little civilization you're starting to build, and you work through it and resolve it, and that's got great ramifications for everything. And then in a ongoing game, you would then move the clock forward maybe a generation. Say, these are the new challenges, these are new opportunities. Let's make new characters from these different families that give us a new perspective on them and keep playing.
That sounds super cool. You're a good seller. So that's your latest game at the moment, as the one you're the most proud of and selling the most?
We finished the Kickstarter for the second edition of that near the end of last year. Here at UK Games Expo is the first chance people have had to buy the physical copy of it, and it's been really good. We had a great response to it. What we're doing from now on is adapting that generational style of play to other genres. So Rhapsody of Blood, which I mentioned earlier, is adapting that to a sort of gothic horror sort of setting. So once a generation, the blood moon rises and an evil castle from outside our universe invades it to corrupt reality. And you are the heroes from different bloodlines who have the insight to see that the castle has arrived and charge in there to try and defeat the regent. But as you're fighting the regent's minions, getting into cinematic boss fights with their servants, you're getting more and more corrupted by its power, which is giving you all sorts of awesome, cool powers. But if you get too much, you might turn into a minion of the regent. Or once you've defeated them, maybe you're too tempted by the power that's been gathering there and you claim it and make great change to the world in your own image. But that means that the next time, the next generation, the castle arrives, you're the end boss now.
You mentioned Castlevania. There's definitely a Belmont feel to
that.
Exactly,
exactly. So it's sort of like how you go from the medieval Belmonts of the initial Castlevanias all the way up to like almost sort of modern day or futuristic ones that they went with oh, I can't remember what the name of the game was. The one for the GS, they were really good. Anyway.
cool. Grant told a bit about your game, also Mary's. I would be curious to have you tell me about Mary's games.
Mary works with Grant on Spire and other sort of thing. Do you want me to tell you more about those or the other games
we have
on the store?
Unless you got, I mean, if you have more things to plug for yourself, that's your platform. Go.
Well, I think I'd like to plug the games for the people who aren't here because, you know, we're a league. We're here about sort of collaborative game design and production. So, for example, one game I think deserves loads of love is Pigsmoke, a game of Sorcerer's Academia. So you play the faculty at America's third most prestigious wizarding university. Basically, the way I picture it is, you know what a hard time the teachers at Hogwarts had managing the kids?
Yeah.
Now imagine they're managing undergrads. and trying to get tenure and submitting papers. So it's quite a sort of satirical, comedic game about, it's a bit of a sort of taking a side eye at academia, taking a side eye at the Harry Potter sort of thing. But it's a really fun game and has quite a cool magic system.
What's the format again? Is it a game of single one shot or campaign?
So that's a game you can certainly play one shots. I think part of it is the guy who runs it, he likes running it as one shots, where you can say, like, the dean, which is this weird alien entity that's squatting in the university, has issued some sort of strange edict that you need to follow. What do you do? How do you manage this? All that sort of thing. So that works great as a one shot. But you can also, over long-term play, do things like manage the burnout of your character, see if you can get tenure, that sort of thing. So there's quite long-range advancement, but it's you can get a lot of the fun of it in a one shot, I'd say.
Awesome. I was asking, are you based in London?
I'm based in Oxford.
In Oxford?
But I commute to London.
Well, I'm going to ask you what I asked Grant, but for Oxford, is Oxford for a tabletop RPG fan? Is it a good place to live and play?
Yeah, so I went to university there, which is where I first started playing role-playing games, because the Student Role-Playing Game Society, the Oxford Role-Playing Game Society, is really great for role-playing. We have a ton of non-student members. They have weekly drop-in tabletops so you can try all sorts of different systems. Also a thriving LARP community, so if you're interested in maybe the freeform social LARPs or the combat LARPs running around the woods, both of those. The society has a sort of tradition where every year we get new people who had never run a game before, to pitch a game to run for the freeform social LARP, and then they run that for a year. And then we do something else for the next year.
That's interesting, because I made an episode about a university in France where they do the same. It's aviation engineering school. Huh. And you join the club and they got a big convention. And if you are new, you need to master and create something there.
Yeah. But it's this real sense that it's not like these old people who know how to make things sort of squatting at the top. It's like everyone can make something, everyone can give it a shot. So like at the moment, what's being run is a game about an alien invasion during Renaissance Europe.
Nice.
So like portals opened in the sky over like the time of the Borgias and that sort of thing. And you're the courtiers, and I think at least two people are playing jesters, meeting together to try and decide what the hell to do about this invasion.
Cool.
That sort of thing.
I got a new traditional question now for convention. I'm finishing with asking people I interview who they think I should interview next at the convention.
Ooh, that's an interesting one.
I hope I will have time too, because as I'm asking that, I got more and more people to interview. But
gosh, kind of spoiled for choice.
Actually, it reminds me, it's somewhere around here, but I couldn't find them. I was told about a game called Is It a Plane?
Oh, right, yes. In fact, yes.
They're
all the way over, they're up that alley, I think, if they're still around, I think. Do you know the pitch for it?
Well, go ahead. Someone told me, but it was not on the microphone.
So basically, it's a superhero role-playing game, currently on Kickstarter, where their resolution system is drawing a panel of a comic. So you sit down with, like, you have a whiteboard thing in front of you with a pen, and you draw what you want to happen next, and then without saying anything, pass that to other people, and depending on what they think you've drawn, decides what happens. How successful you are.
They think you've drawn, so there's a Pictionary dimension to it.
Yeah, exactly. So you think that you drew yourself setting someone on fire with your mind, but everyone else thinks you're making them angry or whatever, so that's what happens.
Excellent. And the authors are Psychic Games, is that right, the publisher?
I think so, yeah. They also did one called I Love the Core or something that was about Marines doing tactical combat. Not really my sort of thing, but it's done well for them.
I tried to chase them and ask them a few questions. Thank you so much, James.
No worries.
And let's keep in touch via Twitter.
Yeah.
What's your handle so people can follow you?
I do game design thing at UFO Press RPGs and tweet about, like, I don't know, science research and game design and politics and such at James C. Isles.
Thank you very much. Have a lovely weekend. We'll be right back. Following the recommendation of the Modifuse team this year, I started a new tradition. At the end of interviews, I'm asking people to suggest to me who I should interview next. And Modifuse, Chris Burge, said I should come here because he's very excited about Full Moon Jacket.
Full Moon Jacket,
so
yeah.
Could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I can. My name is Shep, so I'm here representing WordForge Games today. Full Moon Jacket is actually designed by Strangely Games, who's a gentleman called Paul Allen, who is one of my best friends.
Oh.
And I went to Essen with him last year to demo Full Moon Jacket. Unfortunately, he can't be here today, so I'm kind of representing him. It is a survival horror game about werewolves in Vietnam. Now, you might be wondering where the werewolves came from in Vietnam. We understand that they were there all along, but they weren't reported in the news. And it is a very fast-paced, arcade-style survival game, cooperative, up to six players. You have a race to find the colonel who's down in the jungle.
That reminds me of something vaguely with Vietnam, a colonel you need to find.
You've got to find him, you've got to extract him to the helicopter before it's too late. And the reason it might be too late is because there are hordes and hordes and hordes of werewolves pouring out of the jungle trying to tear you limb from limb.
You're the second game this year here based on Vietnam. I'm sure there are much more, but is Vietnam becoming something old enough that we can go into that history and these events and play with it, actually?
Well, I mean, you know, war games at their root have always been a benchmark of the gaming community, and pretty much every period of time has been covered as we go along. Vietnam's always been a hugely popular position from the movie perspective, okay? And I think the way the games industry is moving, it's becoming a much more cinematic experience that we're seeing with much more miniatures, that we're seeing much more thematic gameplay. And so I think it makes sense that games are starting to follow in the same way a movie director would pitch something. You know, we've done World War II an awful lot in the games industry, and we've done the medieval and fantasy war a lot in the games industry. And I think that kind of war and conflict gaming, Vietnam makes an obvious move. There's a lot of movie reference out there, a lot of history to be able to dip into. And, you know, and I know Paul particularly is a huge fan of the Vietnam movie kind of world, and was, you know, obviously heavily inspired him to combine his two favorite things, and that is movies about Vietnam and werewolves.
It kind of makes sense because we are a generation who grew up with those movies as children.
Yeah.
We were watching. Does the game integrate sort of historical element beyond the settings? I mean, are there the North Vietnam armies are involved or these sort of things?
Yeah, so the playable characters, the six playable characters, are not all US military. So there is also the Vietnamese members of the team as well. So the overall idea is that the war is pretty much over, but the war against the werewolves has had to rally everybody together.
Oh,
okay?
I see.
So, and in terms of weapons and equipment, it's pretty historically accurate. But obviously, the fact that it's werewolves in Vietnam, it does tread quite heavily on the sort of fantasy element. And so it takes historical seriousness with a bit of a pinch of salt. But it's accurate enough for those people who it's important to them to see the right person carrying the right weapon or wearing the right uniform, so to speak.
I'm conscious that I might sound like I'm chasing the controversy, but just it's subjects which I find are interesting. There's been a bit of talks recently with Battlefield having a new game set in World War II and putting on their cover a woman soldier, and some people were complaining about the historical accuracy of that, which is it's questionable because there have been a lot of women fighting World War II for sure. Are there women also in Full Moon Jacket?
So there are, yeah. Again, the Vietnamese soldiers, the gunner, the scout of female characters. There are no female American soldiers in the game. Again, the decision behind that may have been due to historical accuracy. It may have been that he earmarked the female characters to fulfill particular roles. I don't want to speak for Paul on that subject, but
of course, yeah.
I mean, it wouldn't be something that would bother me seeing somebody female American uniform.
A CIA operative.
Yeah, the fact that there's controversy on other systems because of that, it seems strange that they wouldn't,
You got a werewolf and a mechanical arm in the case of Battlefield.
Yeah, absolutely,
So, anyway. do you have anything to add, or maybe other stuff to plug?
Well, Full Moon Jacket's currently in manufacturing. We're hoping to get that out to backers very, very soon. Next in line will be Schism from us at Wordford Games, which is another non-historically accurate game. So this is a war between heaven and hell, which is breaking out on Earth. And it's a race to gather the biggest army of followers and believers, or gather an army of lost souls to fight your cause. It's a race game whereby you are gathering resources, but in this case, those resources are trying to run away from you. And that will be out within the next 2 to 3 months on Kickstarter from us, following the Full Moon Jacket.
That sounds cool. Do you know the role-playing game In Nomine Satanis?
I do know In Nomine. I'm actually the designer of Schism, and In Nomine was a big part of my teenage years. And it's probably fair to say that some nugget of that influenced my decision to make this game many, many years later. Yeah, it's a great system.
It's great because the show The Role is dedicated to connecting different communities of roleplay, especially French speaking role players, and In Nomine Satanis was a French game initially.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we had a special episode about In Nomine Satanis, which I recommend you check. Yeah, so is there more you want to tell about Schism?
Sure. I mean, the core game has 8 different playable characters. Each of those characters is a very unique flavor in the way that they interact with the world and what kind of angel or demon they represent. The game uses, I guess, a fairly abstract mechanic at root, where the pawns are moved around the board and the aim is to collect them or go into conflict with the other people as well. And this is obviously a demo set here, and
there are
plans to create these beautiful character illustrations possibly in a miniature format as well.
One of the things I found out about In Nomine, we call In Nomine Satanis Magna Veritas in France, was that In Nomine Satanis Magna Veritas was very satirical and humoristic, while the US adaptation by Chaosium was more serious. Is Schism sort of more serious, like something like Fallen?
It's certainly on a slightly more serious vibe.
So it's not Dogma then?
It's not Dogma, that's for sure. Yeah, no, it isn't Dogma. No, it has a much more serious vibe. I guess in some respects it's quite dark. Some of the characters seem quite sinister or violent. But the game, to make sure all these characters have unique ways of playing, each character comes with a unique deck of cards. It has a range of abilities, attacks, powers that are unique to their character. But we use these in a few different ways. So each card also has a range of numbers on them that reflect attack and defense values. And so they're revealed. Instead of the roll of a dice, we use the numbers of random turns of cards to resolve conflicts, to resolve different roles that take part during the course of the game. So there's an element of hand building, of retaining certain cards to be able to achieve certain things in the game. Well, maybe having to keep hold of cards that are less useful to you in terms of what they do, but because they have the right values on them to achieve certain tasks. So you have to kind of create a balance with your hand's worth of cards as you play through as well.
So you were saying this one is a demo, and I see wood meeples. Are you keeping it like kind of Euro gamey like this, or are you going to try to have actual miniatures or followers?
Yeah,
this is a
hot topic of debate for us at the moment. So the original intention when I created this game was to create a game which will be a very affordable price point. Okay, so
I think it's a good approach.
Yeah, so you're obviously aware you stick miniatures in a game and the price goes up very steeply. So what we're looking at here are wooden pawns, some wooden cones, dice, very simple in different colours. So we're currently discussing a compromise. Turning all of these 80-odd pieces into miniatures is going to get extortionately expensive. So the current compromise is that the souls and the believers, which are collectively referred to as pawns, will remain pawns.
Okay.
It seems thematic, that's what they're called in the game. The 8 playable characters may get upgraded from pawns to be beautiful miniatures based on the artwork that you see here. And these are abstract shapes as well. These are the damned warriors. These are non-player characters that hunt you out during the course of the game. And these may end up being miniatures as well.
I think it's a... Well, I can imagine it's a debate, but even debate among people buying those games. But I've seen recently a game I was very interested into mechanically, and it came with very gorgeous miniatures, but the purchase was too expensive for me.
Absolutely.
So I was a bit, you know, thinking, oh well, is it a bit, it's a pity there's not a cheap version without the miniature, and people who want the miniatures could had them
absolutely
on the side.
A miniatures upgrade pack
exactly,
is something that we have also been discussing. And I think that's probably the way that we will go. So the core game is what you see here with the wooden components. And that a miniatures upgrade pack would be available for the player characters and the Damned Warriors. But we'll probably leave the pawns and the so the believers and the souls as they are, or we do a single sculpt. So there's one design of soul and one design of believer, and you can buy a pack of 30 of each of those as well. But I think as a core game, to be able to release something that sits on a shelf at a much more affordable price point is far more appealing for me as a designer these days than you know, huge miniatures games. I've got some great miniatures games on my shelf at home, and I look back and think how much I spent on them, and I think, you know, it's got miniatures and it's beautiful, but does it really feel like a miniatures game? Does it need the miniatures for me to really enjoy playing this game? And in some of the cases, the answer is no, it doesn't need them. All it's done is made me spend an extra £20 or £30. I could have bought another game for that. So, yeah, I'd like to try and keep costs down where possible for the buyer.
It's also, I could see myself buying the game, seeing I enjoy it, and then feel like one day, I want to treat myself and
get the upgrade. Absolutely.
I cannot resist ask you what you can tell me if you recall an adventure which was especially interesting in Nomine.
Wow. I mean, my years playing in Nomine was probably... I'm probably going back about 12 years or so, I would think, since I was really playing it heavily.
Do you remember a character, maybe?
I had a character, yeah. Well, actually, I did have a character, and the character you've got here in front of you, the Watcher, is based on the character I used to play in Nomine. This, as I said, it's influenced the game I made today, not only the theme of angels, and I'm a huge fan of the concept of angels amongst men. I'm not a religious person, but that concept in movies has always entertained me to the point that I've got full-length wings tattooed down my back. And it's always really entertained me. And I used to play a guy in Nomine who never spoke and never took his sunglasses off. And he was dedicated to just observing everything and knowing everything. He had this knowledge is power vibe. If he knew everything, he knew what everybody was doing at all times, what everybody's motives were. He never really needed to play both sides because he just knew what the outcome would be. He was able to hedge those bets. He was able to work out what people were going to do and how people were going to act and work up on that way without ever needing to really interact with people. He just listened and he just observed. And that character became the inspiration for the Watcher, which in terms of Schism is effectively the most balanced of all characters. He has nothing exceptional about him in any way, but he's able to just tie the entire game together and play the middle ground nicely.
Awesome. Do you have one final thing to say to the listeners of the Race Podcast who are not at the UK Game Expo? Cool.
I mean, it's a great show. Anybody that gets the chance to come over in the future should really, really try and do so. It's a fantastic show. Thank you for, you know, coming and taking the time to talk to us about Full Moon Jacket and about Schism and reminding me how amazing Nomine is as a game.
Well, please check the episode
I will,
14
and
let me know what you think. The funny thing is, in France, it was much more frequent that we would play, because in Nomine, the full name in France of the second edition is In Nomine Satanis Magna Veritas, and it was a two-sided book. One book was for the angels, one book was for the demons.
Uh-huh.
So, and in Nomine, most people would play In Nomine, not Magna Veritas, because In Nomine were the devils.
Yeah.
And it was, in France, less people were playing angels, more people were playing demons. And the way demons were played, like a terrible character, but in a very, satirical, dark humor way.
So,
I hope with my episode the vibe is sort of there. It's three British demons taking the Eurostar to have a mission in France and meeting a French demon, which I play. And I think the sound quality is a bit so-so, but I think in terms of roleplay, it was quite interesting.
In episode 14, you say?
14, yeah.
I'll be on it.
It's called Parental Advisory in Nomine Satanis, so should be able to find it.
That's my Monday morning sort.
Thank you so much, and if you have someone to thank, it's Chris Bird from Modifius.
Brilliant. I shall go and shake his hand in a bit. Thank
awesome.
You very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So it's past midnight at the UK Games Expo. We are at the Hilton Hotel where the you can join games of role-playing games. And I'm just coming out of an excellent session of Nobilis, mastered by, I'm going to call him Game Master Dave.
Yep. Well, I suppose it's Hollyhock God for Nobilis, isn't it?
Sorry, what?
Hollyhock God. It's the term they use in-game.
Okay, Hollyhock God then.
But no one else seems to use it ever, so...
And we also have one of my fellow players, Player Dave, I guess I'm going to call
him.
Hi. GM Dave, Hot God. Why Nobilis in a convention?
I just really like the world of it. I just really like the ideas that go into the game. And it's very different to a lot of stuff that you get pitched at conventions. And for me, I like to sample a lot of different things. And I just hoped people felt the same. And it turns out some people did. And were crazy to buy tickets.
Oh, did you first hear about Nobilis?
Oh, I started playing second edition. There's a role-playing club that I used to go to in Lancaster, LERPS, that's the student union one, and there was a few people there that played it. Never managed to get into a game of it. It's actually very hard to find people to run, but I ran a few sessions with home friends and ran a like couple of shot campaigns with like people like flatmates and things, and just then didn't play it for ages and just really wanted to pick it up again.
It was a good surprise for me when I saw it in the available games, because I heard about Nobilis a long time ago, and in an episode I had Jim Swallis, who was instrumental in publishing it, the first edition, and made me really want to play it. So I was like, oh yeah, I need to pick this up. What about you, Dave? What did you think of the session tonight?
I thought it was quite fun.
I think we had a great team of players. I mean, it was amazing. We had a Commodore, noble of, what was he the noble of?
Sailing.
Yourself, Dave, you were the noble of...
I was the noble of climate.
So, and
that
I...
wasn't the biggest character note, really, was it?
I was much more a very badass warrior.
Yeah, yeah, it was funny, for the climate was a big deal. I was the noble of stories, and we also had the noble of vines, yes.
Again, it's one of those ones where their estate wasn't really the main focus. Their thing was high summoning, which I had to kind of adapt from a second edition with, I think, some success.
What were you aiming for with that story? I don't know, without spoiling too much, what can you tell about the session you ran for us?
With Nobilis, I feel it's a lot about the journey and like the characters rather than what actually happens. I definitely left the ending very vague, you know, why you were there, that kind of thing. It was about what happened along the way, and I think we had some really great character moments. We kind of got to see it at the heart of a few of these characters and kind of see what made them tick, and I really, really liked that. And I just wanted to facilitate that happening more than actually doing much with the plot.
What was your favorite moment, Dave? Or should I say... Attackers.
Well, attacking is what I did.
Noble of climate.
Picking between the two major scenes that I really had. One was a combat scene, and the other was a much more introspective scene for the character. So in the combat scene, we had this massive moon, and I basically gave it a good solid pump. And it sort of,
so it, that was things don't get more epic than that.
The other scene, because I'm climate, my mood affects the climate. So when I'm in a bad mood, the climate is bad. And we had just encountered a character that is essentially a nemesis, pretty much. So my character was in sort of a very foul mood, having encountered this nemesis-type character whilst engaging in a quest for something else.
What I personally really enjoy is how, at some point, some kind of synergy developed between my character and the noble of sailing. It sort of made sense that sailors, they got stories, and it just happened very naturally that we built up something with an NPC, which we kept under
that,
arm.
That did end really badly, but I think that was kind of a nice thing that, like, for the plot, it kind of really drove home how lost and broken this world you'd gone to was, that you tried to help these people and it backfired horribly. And I actually thought that really kind of put an underline on it. And when you found out that people were missing, Dave, I thought that was, like, you know, quite an interesting scene. I say nice. I don't mean nice as in nice, nice. I mean nice as in good characterization.
That was really uplifting.
I really thought your response to that was, like, nice and measured, and you did a really good job, like, conveying that.
So what was your favorite moment?
To be fair, moon punching was damn good. I've been wanting to do that encounter for a while, and I had no idea how you guys were going to react to it. There was a whole other scene, if you'd been eaten by it, where there's, like, a world in its belly, which we could have used to get you to other places, and it's a lot of backups, but then that was just fun to do, like, a completely gonzo, over-the-top fight scene. It's just a very nice thing to do sometimes. And I think the other one was actually probably the sort of end of the catacombs bit, where you realize that the people were lost. And, like I say, seeing it sink in, like, that this world is broken, I thought that was really, really powerful moment, and I really felt that, and I hope you guys did too.
Yeah, especially, I mean, in a way it was made better because we at least temporarily saved one of them. The fact that the others disappeared was even more dramatic. Before we started the game, you said you were considering running it again if it went well at Dragon Meat, so are you going to run it at Dragon Meat?
I think so. Probably going to put in for it. It really depends on what else I get my sticky fingers into role-playing-wise. But I really would like to. I think that it's going to need some upkeep. There is definitely a lot of explanation that needs properly typing up and printing out. I've got a lot of notes written down, but unfortunately I had printing issues and so couldn't get a lot of them to you. And some stuff just, I didn't know if I need to explain it as much as I did. I think the stuff like the gifts, all the gifts needed like a paragraph or so, you know, just explaining how they worked on their own. Like little things like that. I think overall the characters I really liked. I've got like one or two more that we can put in. So a little bit more player choice would be nice. I'd like to do some customization hooks, but I'm not quite sure which to do. I could probably just like let people assign a couple of bond points, things like that, because I am a big fan of letting people customize their characters. It really makes them own them more.
I thought that the interpretation characterization was so much room, and I really enjoyed that scene you made where we had each of us to give away a object, just put it on to leave
in the shrine.
Yeah, yeah.
So at the beginning, each of the characters had to go to the Shrine of Falling Stars, which is the sort of house of their order, and to officially take on the quest. And a part of the quest is they left a keepsake in the chapel. And the chapel had like hundreds of unreclaimed keepsakes, because the idea is you get it back when you return successfully from your quest. The idea was, one, to underline that a lot of people don't come back, which kind of sets the stage for stuff like heroic sacrifices. I think you were probably ready to do a heroic sacrifice there, weren't you, Dave?
What was your keepsake?
My keepsake was a lock of hair from my fallen lover.
Of which we established later that it's your former lover, but you don't remember.
Yes, erased from the memory of reality itself.
That was very cool. I thought each of us came up with a lot of flavoring, so that's why I didn't mind the fact that you would not, you know, make your little customization of the mechanical aspect, because there was a lot of flavoring you brought and that each of us brought to the thing.
Yeah, the other thing that I thought the talisman did was get people to really have a think about their character early on. Because there is a lot of temptation to just let everything come out in play, but occasionally it's nice to just kind of get people into that mindset before you go into the main scenes. And I thought that would be a nice way of doing it, and I'm actually really happy about how it turned out. I mean, it's tough. It really puts people on the spot, but it also gets people used to being on the spot and coming up with ideas. I think it made a difference.
Dave, do you have anything to add about that session? And maybe about the UK Games Expo itself?
It was real fun. I enjoyed it. Yeah, so definitely want to play Nebulous again.
Did you have any other highlights of role-playing game expo this year?
Oh, this is my fourth game of the weekend that I've run, and the fourth different system. And so I ran Unknown Armies yesterday, and I ran Lovecraft-esque. Lovecraft-esque, I wanted to run at a convention for a while, and did not disappoint. It started off very silly, very not. We didn't really get the horror mood in the first act. Second act just got ridiculously intense as the pressure kind of piled on, and our final horror was just bizarre and unsettling, which is exactly what I wanted out of the game. Microscope became an absolute monstrosity with far too many players and far too much time, if I'm completely honest. But all the players seem to be having a lot of fun, and you know, things kicked up. And yeah, it's always nice to get a bit of Unknown Armies action in there.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Dave, to join our team of player and for your contribution, and GM Dave for this game, which was, again, it's been a while. I wanted to try Nobilis, and it was really worth the wait. It was great.
Awesome. Thanks. I'm really glad you enjoyed it. It's what I do it for.
This episode included Disparales, Post-Apocalypsis by Los Margaritos, The Werewolf Rock by The Zombie Dandies, and of course our theme song Solta o Frango by Bandido Roll. The logo of the Rollies Podcast is designed by Rollin Khan, and the Rollies Podcast is a proud member of the RPG Academy Network. Speaking of the RPG Academy, a member blessed the show with a very heartwarming review on iTunes. Thank you so much, Beskartum. I'm going to read it, and I will read yours if you post one. Or should I say, when you post one, please do go to iTunes to leave reviews of the show. So Beskartum was saying, "Always something different and interesting. The reason I love the podcast is that it is always different and never boring. The wide variety of topics, guests, and games always makes the podcast interesting. The few episodes that go back and forth between interview and actual play are my favorite. The actual play portions in episode 28 are absolutely hilarious." Thank you so much, Tom. I keep saying that, but it's a big, big encouragement, and it's so reassuring to read that people enjoy my little attempt at making voices, etc., and my work with the show. And if the other listeners would like to leave a review, a 5-star review, preferably, if you have complaints, just send them to me by email, and then hear it read out on the show by me with my terrible French accent. Please do so, and you can do so on Podchaser and Stitcher as well. Or you can do one. You go through the trouble of writing a review, and then you just have to copy-paste it on the three platforms, which is that would be so great. That would be so great. If you want to support the show even further, beyond sharing it any way you can with anyone you can, wink, wink, remember this pod. Beyond that, you can support the show also through Patreon. And this will give you access to some bonus content, like we've got a completely exclusive tiny show called Café Rolliste, which we record during our lunch breaks with Akadosh, who's been the game master of that episode 28. and things quite interesting. And this year we recorded all the or answer to all the questions of RPG a day. And I'm happy, Tom, that you like the actual play, because there's going to be more. First of all, it's going to be the second part of the actual play with Brendan LaSalle, of course. And there's another one which I need to check the quality of, but if I remember correctly, I already did and it was okay, which will follow once we are done with UK Games Expo 2018. About that, in terms of reviews and comments, I think I already said that, but I'm concerned this year of the number of episodes of the season, which were episodes from a convention. It feels like there's a very large proportion of the content this year, which was at convention, and it's not over. I'm about to say a bit about more about that in a second. And I would be keen to hear listeners what they think. Do they think it's too much? I personally think it's a bit too much. I need to discipline myself to record less. It's a bit weird, but yeah, when I go around, I want to talk to everyone, and having a microphone is a good excuse. And documenting that, it's quite cool. So if listeners would like me to record, think there's too much convention content, well, I will reduce it, or maybe I will put some on the Patreon exclusive and keep just the best. But man, then it's a bit delicate with a piece of people I interview who are plugging their products, etc. But yeah, just send me feedback. And I was talking about conventions. Okay, so let's start with the regular. So this is a third part of UK Games Expo. There's going to be a fourth part, and there is going to be the second part of the bonus actual play with Brendan LaSalle, and then we should be done with Expo. I was hoping to go much faster with that, releasing several episodes per month, but life caught up. I got a lovely baby. I got a new job. And I'm already quite happy to be disciplined enough to release one episode per month. But yeah, that's it. So I could not speed that up. Expo is going to be behind us and we'll go back next year without a doubt. Approaching quite fast. On December 1st, the regulars of the show, listeners of the show will know what it is about. We've got Dragon Meet coming in London 2018. It's going to be on Saturday, December 1st. And I'm happy now to be able to announce the name of all the shows, which as part of Dragon Meet 2018 will be joining the podcast zone. So we will have Formal Gamer, Rusty Quill, the good friends of Jackson Aliens. I'm very happy to have them. I mean, I'm happy with all the show joining, but I was especially keen to meet the team of good friends of Jackson Alias. I didn't have an opportunity yet, and it seems to be an excellent show. We've got Sword Coast Soundscapes, who is not per se a podcast, but a channel on YouTube where AG, a sound engineer, is designing for free, and you can download them soundscapes for Dungeons & Dragons and all of that. And first of all, they're quite cool, and second, if you're a listener of the show, you might have heard them on several episodes. There will be the Rollis podcast, of course, myself. There will be the Coriolis Effect. There will be the Penance RPG podcast, D&D Actual Play Show. There will be Green Stuff Games. I made a little interview with Josie from that YouTube channel, who was very charming, and recorded last year an episode with Ian Livingstone. I recommend you check it out on her YouTube channel. We're going to have Pretending with Dice, another actual play D&D. There's going to be Darker Days Radio, which I discovered recently, and they got interviews also at Expo and at Gen Con, and it's quite cool. I mean, if you don't mind having so much convention content on the Race Podcast and want even more, that's a place to look for, and there's plenty other stuff. And finally, we got the D20 Future Show. So they're going to be at the Podcast Zone at Dragon Meets, and the concept is the following. First of all, they're all there. We're going to have a little booth provided by Dragon Meet where you can meet and greet several hosts of each of those shows. That's quite nice already if you like them and would like to say something in person to them. Second, interview discussion shows like my own will be interviewing people, game designers, and sometimes visitors of Dragon Meet. So if you want to be interviewed, that might be an opportunity. I will be very happy to hear what you have to say about the hobby and ask you a few questions. But also, like for the last two previous years, we will be recording actual place. So for the Formal Gamer and other shows, we'll be running game sessions, which you can join on the fly, and it will be recorded, and you might be playing with host of shows from the podcast zone, like myself. So if you want an opportunity to play with me or someone from the Rusty Quill and so on, here's your opportunity. That's Dragon Meet here in London, December 1st. Much, much closer to us. Let me double check the date, but it's going to be a close call because it's already next weekend. I have the pleasure to go for the first time to the MCM Comic Con, which is a huge exhibition from what I heard. It's not limited to tabletop RPGs, it's broad geekiness, and this year we are blessed with the visit from the cast of Critical Role. So I'm crossing my fingers, and if you're listening to this, please cross your fingers alongside me. I'm very hopeful to be able to interview a couple people from Critical Role. That would be amazing. In any case, you can come too to see their panels, to maybe meet them in person and have a signing of some sort. I'm not used to this kind of conventions. Last time I did that, it was still in Belgium. I was 20-something, maybe 18-something. And I had a signature. I had a book signed by an actor who played an Ewok in Return of the Jedi. I don't remember his name. It was not Warwick Davis. And the actor who played Captain Panaka in The Phantom Menace. It was charming and lovely, but it's not a... I'm going to be honest, it's not a signature. In hindsight, the movie, it's The Phantom Menace, so it's cool, but it's not Harrison Ford, but there's going to be people who played in the original trilogy as well. Some actors also from a solo Star Wars story will be at Comic-Con. There's going to be a premiere of Doctor Who. There's going to be the cast of Starsky and Hutch. If you are an 80s kid like me, there's going to be Chris Barry from Red Dwarf. There's going to be, I believe, Mr. Bautista from Guardians of the Galaxy and Spectre. I mean, there's so many people. I mean, it sounds very, very exciting. It's going to be Colin Baker, also famous Doctor Who. You name them. Just check mcmcomiccon.com. Dragon Meet Comic-Con Expo next year. There's Acadecon around the corner. Also, if you are close to Dayton, check the details on the RPG Academy website. Sadly, I cannot attend. Maybe I will have a Kickstarter or something someday to join there, unless the Patreon has got more people joining. Still in London on November 27th, we will have our monthly Lord of the Rings and Dice. So if you want to meet other role players, perfect opportunity to meet players who are willing to join your table, to find game master who are looking for players. We are not playing there, but it's just a friendly drink. You take a soft drink, you drink with moderation if it's alcohol, and there's artisan pizza, and it's very cool, and there's a link in the description of the show. What's next? Well, it's already a lot, isn't it? Did I mention everything? I think I mentioned everything. I mean, there's all the classics. iTunes already did. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram. I hope you will have a great Halloween. Go into the description of the episode for the details and names of all the games we mentioned. And if they're available on DriveThru, if you click on the name of the game, we'll bring you to DriveThru. And there, if you purchase the game from Jim's Illis, Legacy, well, I will have a small contribution through the affiliate program of DriveThru. And if you're not looking for Legacy, Life Among the Ruins, but something else, you go to the main page of the Rollist Podcast, and there's a link, and if you click on it, and then you search on DriveThru for whatever you want, and you order it, again, it gives a little contribution to the show, which allows me to attend those conventions, take a day off. I'm taking a day off from work, which is great, but cost money. Otherwise life is good. I've got a lot to edit, and next gonna be the actual play with Brendan LaSalle. So yeah, see you around for the second part of the bonus with Brendan LaSalle, And in the meantime, have good games and have good conventions, maybe. Cheers, bye. Olé, 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 solta o frango e vem com a gente. Olé, 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 solta o frango e vem com a gente. Nós é tipo bem Jesus, todo mundo a gente ama. Ainda mais se for gatinha, rola até levar pra cama. A gente topa tudo, sapatão e bigoduto na hora do piriri. Cai em mim, ô travesti.
Vai, batuque!
Olê, 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 solta o frango e vem com a gente. Olê, 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 solta o frango e vem com a gente. This is Halloween, 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 Halloween. This town we call home, everyone hail to the pumpkin song.